Chip, Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis, off for another jaunt into broadcast excellence.
Oh, we're jaunting today.
We're jaunting.
I like that.
Yeah, I feel jaunty.
Love a good jaunt.
Yeah. Jaunt. What is a jaunt? Sort of a... Is it kind of a snappier prance. Way of walking?
Jaunt is a bit of a... It's somewhere between a skip and a prance.
Mm.
Yeah.
Prance.
Yeah, sort of a... Yeah, we're jaunting. Let me just say this. We have our second to last chance for you to rip us off for Billy Joel tickets coming your way today after 5 o'clock.
Okay.
I would say if you have things to do, make sure you clear your schedule for after 5 o'clock. It's really an interesting program.
It is.
It's pretty good before we get there. But after we get there, look out. Because coming up, we got Michael Steele. Mm-hmm. We've got Renato Mariotti to talk about the Manafort update. Jury wanted to go. One of the jurors, jury's going to go home for the weekend in 45 minutes. They have not made a decision yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, one of the jurors, I have to go to a party.
Oh, no.
So we're going. So I did not realize that Violetta was actually on the jury. But I was like, I'm going. I've got to go now. I have things I have to do, which, you know, you kind of get. Listen, I don't want to take anything away from jurors. This is a tough job. I get it. Now this jury is not sequestered, which actually comes into play in our news today, because they, even though they're told to avoid news and information, they are not sequestered, and the president is commenting on the trial.
Very much so. He jumped out there.
So, which is pretty unusual for the sitting president of the United States to do that.
Right. So. The juror says it was a previously scheduled engagement. So
nothing
you can do about it. You know? Sometimes you have that.
Yeah.
But they're indicating there's some people are reading the tea leaves that some of the things that they're hearing is that it may wrap up next week. It's not going to be an extremely lengthy jury.
Well, if that's in fact the case. I mean, they were coming back today. I'd say that Paul Manafort should just plan on living in paper clothes for the rest of his life. But the longer they stay out, the more this benefits, at least in theory, until they come in, the case of Paul Manafort.
Yeah, but even one of the most serious counts carries up to 30 years. So he's not a young man. And so out of all 18 counts, it's still plausible that if they find him not guilty, I mean, there's a lot to get through there.
Right. 18 total, 17 total, something like that.
Is it 18?
So it's 18. Whatever it is. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going through, and in each count, you have to make decisions about each count. So it's going to take some time regardless. We shall see. And if Paul Manafort gets a not guilty on all of them, I'd say that that's gonna change the dynamic here a little bit with Robert Mueller, even though they said, well, no, it really isn't. It actually will. And then the president will do a victory dance, and then he'll fire everybody he doesn't like and cut off everybody's security clearances, maybe fire Robert Mueller. You know, you're going to see a reaction to this. It's all coming to a head one way or the other.
It certainly will. It'll have an impact. You think if the president came to Chicago this weekend for the Air and Water Show, he would formally and officially scrap his idea for a military parade?
He has formally and officially scrapped it.
I thought it was delayed, that he still hasn't said that it's not...
No, he said he's canceling.
He's done with the idea.
Yeah. He said he's canceling because Washington wanted too much money for it. It's Washington. I mean, I read that. You know what? Let's talk to Michael Steele about it, because I have my own interpretation of what the president meant when he said what he said in his tweeting this morning
about the D.C. officials.
Yes, I think I know what he. I think I get what he's trying to do there. But we'll get to it in just a second with Michael Steele.
Good.
First, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Governor Rauner signed several gun laws.
Violetta.
Then there's this. Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Michael Steele joins us right now.
Yes.
I've got a question for Michael Steele. I don't know if he has an answer for me, but we'll see if he does. Do you have an answer for me?
I may, depending on your question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. Now, you are from the Washington, D.C. general area, from Maryland. You live in Maryland. You were lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland. That touches the District of Columbia. You're familiar with the District of Columbia. Are you not, sir?
I am. I grew up in the District of Columbia.
All right.
So I'm a native Washingtonian.
And you went to college in the District of Columbia, did you not, sir?
I went to college in Baltimore, Johns Hopkins, but I went to law school in D.C., Georgetown.
All right. Okay. I'll sit down and wait for my answer. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for letting me question.
That's it?
I'm sorry. Hold on. I got more questions.
Oh, here we go. I would just caution you, Michael Steele, about answering these questions. I don't recall as an okay, appropriate answer, depending on where he goes with this.
Please do not lead the witness.
I just know you. I know your stuff.
Mr. Steele, if that is your real name.
It is at the moment, yes.
Do you think that when the mayor of Washington, D.C. says it was only going to be $21 million we were asking for this parade, that the fact that this parade has become its own issue is ridiculous enough, but the price tag ballooned to $92 million, the president tweets out, hey, those two politicians in D.C., they're trying to rip me off. I'm not going to be ripped off.
They know a windfall when they see it.
Right.
Tweet.
So it's like, I'm not going to pay their money. It was $21 million. It just seems like a lot of money, but apparently some of that is going to be for street repair after the missile loaders destroy the pavement.
Well, I mean, this is what the president doesn't get and doesn't want to get. The fact of the matter is, there's a reason why we don't run tanks on the streets of our cities. And one of those reasons has to do with the fact that when that tank passes by, that street is basically chop suey. I mean, it becomes weakened, and it's a problem. You got to go back and repair it. And so that's one tank. Now, you're going to run all phalanx of tanks and missile carriers and loaders and all this other stuff because the president wants a military parade, something we've never done in this country, for whatever godforsaken reason he wants it. There's a cost, and there's a real cost to it. He doesn't understand that when you do just a simple protest in the District of Columbia that we've seen recently, that's an enormous cost to the city. And overtime for the police officers, the coordination costs with the federal jurisdictions that would be involved, both on the policing side as well as the, you know, organizational administrative side. So these costs, and that initial number, I laughed when I first heard this number of $20 million. To run a military parade down, it costs you $20 million just to get stuff in position. So it's crazy, and they're not trying to bank the cash or build the system. There are real costs to this, and his own military told him what that would be, and the fact that it was very clear from the beginning the military didn't even want to do this because it's a ridiculous idea.
Right.
It's not who we are as a nation. We don't stick our military prowess out and says mine is bigger than yours. What we do is we have a military that's prepared to engage when it's required, and we don't need to go around boasting that and having military parades to show it.
Well, and he effectively finds a scapegoat here, saying it's the democratically controlled city and the mayor charging $21 million when the tab would still be $92 million. So he's still got $71 million there that the actual parade would cost from the federal government. Seems like a lot of money, almost nearly $100 million to pay for a parade.
It's for a parade, and that's exactly the way to put it. $100 million for a parade, and any logical, fiscally conservative individual, that I ain't fiscally conservative, it's a fiscal minded person, would recognize that that kind of money for that type of activity is not worth it. Particularly again, when all of the agencies involved don't want to do it in the first place. So the president's going to scapegoat the city and try to put it in the context of politics with the Democratic mayor. But that Democratic mayor has to account to a Republican Congress.
Right, because the District of Columbia is a federal district. The budget is paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. And can I say one other thing here?
Yes.
Can I say what? You know what I heard there? I heard a dog whistle. I heard a dog whistle. I hear too many dog whistles now, but I heard one when I saw that this morning. I mean, I was up real early this morning, mm-hmm. and I saw this right when it happened, and I'm like, I know what he's doing. I see that. Washington, D.C., Democrats in Washington, D.C., they're not letting him have his parade. I know what he's doing. I see it.
Yeah, and a black female mayor.
Yeah, I happen to be the whitest guy in America, and I keep hearing, so this isn't a dog whistle anymore. This is like a real whistle, because when I
hear it,
I'm like, I get what he's, okay. It's the black people are keeping him from having his parade. That's what he's trying to say.
That's right. Because we have that kind of power,
yeah.
You know, so that's how we roll. We don't like parades either, so therefore you're not going to have one.
Yeah. Michael Steele, I want to ask you really quickly about Paul Manafort. The president's talking about this when he was on his way to Marine One today, and talking about how sad it is for Paul Manafort. Is that really an appropriate role for a president of the United States while a jury is out and not sequestered and only on their honor not to be consuming any media, but they can accidentally consume something like that? I mean, is that certainly doesn't seem right to me.
Well, it doesn't seem right, but it's typical for Trump to do something like this. So, you know, he wants to try to, influence the system as much as he possibly can, and he'll figure out ways he can do that. I'm very skeptical of this trial. I have not appreciated the way this judge has behaved relative to the prosecutor, particularly inserting himself in his own opinion about the arguments in the case that the prosecution was bringing. I think it may have an impact on the jurors. We'll see. I think this thing is ripe for a mistrial. I think it's also ripe for an acquittal, largely because of that influence by the judge in the way he engaged. So now you have the president sort of layering on top of that. You're right. These jurors are not sequestered, so they are seeing the news. They are hearing from family and friends who are sharing opinions, even though they may not say anything. They're exposed to people with a lot of opinions. Yes, the president came out today and he said da-da-da, you know, and this is what the news is reporting. And the judge himself is even reacting now from the bench to reports about his behavior and so forth. And, of course, now putting out that, you know, he's under threat from various whatever. So, yeah, I'm very concerned about the way this trial has unfolded, because it has not been managed, I think, well by the judge, because he's made himself as much a part of the trial as the defendant. And I think the president right now is trying to gild that lily a little bit with his comments, in hopes that it gets picked up by any jurist who may be so inclined to support the president's view about Paul Manafort.
All you need is one. That's all you need. All right, we'll get more
all
detail.
All you need
on this.
Is one. Yeah, that's right. More all details. You need is one.
Well, happy parade not happening day. We'll have to see.
Yes.
He's going to go to the French one, though. He's going to like that one. That's...
Well, he can go back. He can go back to France. Macron would be very happy to hold a parade for him. I mean, look, you know, you give the little boy the toys that he wants to play with, and that's what Macron will do.
Right? Maybe
trying to do that here in this country.
Maybe he'd like to become the president of France. We could work that out. I'm sure.
I think the French would welcome that. I think this would be a good move.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think. I'm not sure.
No,
yeah,
no.
They're kind of existentialist.
Bridget Macron,
you know.
Get help.
I don't think Bridget Macron will ever let him back into France.
Yeah, well, Bridget Macron, I think what I you know what I saw there with that is that he was like, she's a lot hotter than I thought. I saw her on TV. I didn't think she was that hot. She's super sexy. I want to go back.
The most awkward pull-her-close handshake in the history of awkward handshakes.
That's what's happening in his own head right there.
Let the French have him. That's good. That works.
Well, you know what? Let's just go have a nice weekend. Michael, thank you so much. Appreciate
Thanks,
your time.
Thanks, Michael Steele.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Take care now.
Bye. Michael Steele, our friend, used to run the Republican Party.
He did.
And now he'd get arrested if he tried to walk into a Republican room.
He's a no-invite-em-item?
Don't invite him. Don't invite him item. All right. Judy Pilak, she's got the WGN News, being brought to you by Next Door and Window. Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Yes. Billy Joel tickets coming your way. Second to last time we're going to give away Billy Joel tickets to Wrigley Field for this year is today. Last time is Monday. But that's a whole other thing we can't discuss. It's we're in top secret negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Super secret.
Yes, with Mr. Joel and Mr. Wrigley and
Mr.
Field.
Very important people. We wouldn't want to get them mad.
Yeah, to get all that done. And boy, whew, that is coming up September 7th. It is, it's now the end of August.
I know, don't say that, please. The Aaron Water Show, I usually associate in my mind as being kind of the end of summer.
Sort of back to schoolish.
One of the last festivals.
Things. Yeah.
The last sort of big city events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's going on right now.
Take that out of our mind.
Yeah. All right. Renato Mariotti joins us. He is a former federal prosecutor and now an attorney in private practice here in Chicago. And is you see him all over the place on the TV. He's on the CNN now. Every time you turn on CNN, there he is. He's looking at you like, hey, I don't know. You tell me. I mean, that's
normally the way it goes.
I sort of feel as though every question that gets asked now about what we're seeing is so unprecedented.
Right.
Right. That we're like, I don't know. Now, you have been, I want to just say, as I've been watching your work this week about this jury, when the jury got the case, you seem to be pretty confident that this case was sewn up pretty well because it's a paper case, as you've pointed out, and that makes it dense and complicated, but it's very hard to refute what's in front of you because it's clear. When the jury came back yesterday and said, hey, what is reasonable doubt? Did that concern you?
Well, it is looking from the perspective of the prosecution, it is always concerning. I had many cases where jurors would ask whether or not the judge could define reasonable doubt for them, and that usually is a sign that there's some holdouts in the jury, that the rest of the jury is trying to convince one or two people that whatever hypothetical doubts they have aren't reasonable, and they're looking for to the judge for help. So that's not a good sign for the prosecution. It's not necessarily a bad sign. A lot of times what the end result is that there's what we call a compromise verdict, where the jury will come back where the man is guilty on half the counts, and the end may sound like, okay, well, that's a win for Manafort, he beat half the counts, but as a practical matter, it doesn't help him much at all. The judge can consider everything he did, including the stuff he was acquitted for when sentencing him on the counts that he was convicted on. So he really has to run the table. That's why I was so confident. I still would be betting very heavily on the government, but that was a bad sign. And frankly, the fact that the jury has gone home for the weekend without returning a verdict is also a good sign for the government. It means that they feel like they're still, for the defense, it's a good sign for the defense because it means that they think that there's still work left to be done. They didn't quickly come to a decision.
Let me ask you about that, Renato, because the judge today revealed that he's had personal threats on his life and he has U.S. Marshal protection. And he said that he is denying the media requests to reveal certain information about the trial, including the jurors' names. And that struck me because I wondered, is that normal or typical that you would allow jurors' names to be revealed at this point in the trial? He says he's doing it for the protection of them because he says if I'm getting threats, they will too, and I'm protecting them. What do you make of that?
Yeah, usually the identities of jurors are not revealed at this point. Media sometimes approaches the jurors afterward. That happened, for example, in the Blagojevich trial here in Chicago. It's happened in other trials as well, but not usually during the trial. But obviously the media is being, very aggressive at seeking access here, which is their right under the First Amendment. I will say I was, I had had my life threatened when I was a federal prosecutor. I had been in protective custody with the deputy U.S. Marshals myself. It's not a fun thing, and I know I appeared before judges who were in that situation, and of course here in Chicago we had a judge, Judge Lefkoe, who had family members who were murdered by a litigant. So it's very serious, and it really is, I think, a reminder to all of us that this is a very awful part of the job of being a judge or a prosecutor in my case, and hopefully Judge Ellis can go back to his normal life soon because it's not a fun way to live your life.
Well, That's all very true, and we live in a really stressed out time in America where are behaving in ways and saying things they feel unencumbered to say whatever it is that they want, and it just seems that we're in a freakier time. Yeah. Is that the sort of thing that the judge should be discussing publicly?
You know,
you're not going to be in front of him, Renato, so I need you to answer this.
Yeah, I am. I'm just trying to think about it. It's a really good question that I hadn't considered. And the answer is probably not. It was probably something that the judge should not have discussed publicly. I know that when I was in that situation, we did not discuss the matter publicly at the time, and we're very kept that under wraps. And I think that's generally the right thing to do. Judge Ellis seems to be a colorful character who likes to talk about all sorts of things, and I think he would be wise to say less, but, you know, he's obviously older and, you know, I'm sure in his opinion wiser than I am.
Well, you know a lot. Michael Steele, former head of the Republican Party, was just on with us, and he says he sees the makings of a mistrial here or potentially an acquittal. Do you see either of those things?
I definitely don't see an acquittal. I would bet a lot of money that there won't be an acquittal across the board. And that requires a level of agreement amongst all those jurors that it would just be very hard for me to see, given the mountain of evidence that there is against Manafort. That would really be something. I think those defense attorneys would deserve more than one bottle of champagne if they were able to achieve that result. I think a hung jury is possible. I think, you know, President Trump's comments today feed into that. You know, all they really need is one person who has, you know, is upset about the verdict or thinks it's political, or excuse me, about the prosecution, or thinks that the prosecution is politically motivated, and there you go, you have your hung jury. So that I would be, if I was in the prosecution, I'd be increasingly concerned about a hung jury because the jury has had a lot of time, and they're still deliberating, and they ask about reasonable doubt. It's certainly a possibility that has to be growing in their minds. If the jury saw all that evidence, was just ready to convict, they would have convicted before the weekend.
Well, you know, you had that here in the Blagojevich trial, mm-hmm. right, in Blago 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turned around in Blago 2, and it was like a slam dunk. So,
correct.
So the question is, if this is a hung jury, do you think that the Mueller folks will go back at it in this jurisdiction, or will they just move forward with their Washington case?
I mean, I think ordinarily they would go back and try it again. Partly you're sending a message, I think, to other defendants when you do that. You know, Bill Cosby is another recent case, right, where they didn't have the result. The prosecution didn't have the result in the first trial. They went back. And, you know, I will say, as somebody who's in the U.S. Attorney's Office here at the time and watched the two Blagojevich trials, the government did a much better job in the second trial. They streamlined their case. They dropped some of the defendants and some of the charges, and they presented it in a more concise fashion. And I will say, if I have any criticism of the prosecution here, is that at times they did get a little too bogged down in the details. And it's very, very easy to do in a case like this. There's just so many counts and so many charges and so much detail. It's very complicated. So I think that's always a challenge, is to make something like this simple for the jury.
How quickly can Donald Trump pardon Paul Manafort? And can he pardon him if he gets if there is a hung jury, can he pardon him?
He can pardon him today if he wanted to. He could pardon him at any time. In fact, think about it. Remember, Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, even though he hadn't been charged yet, right? It's just, I'm pardoning you of any crimes you committed, and that's it. So I think, you know, Donald Trump could do that. He could give a broad pardon to Paul Manafort at any time. I think they're hoping they don't have to, or they're hoping that, you know, I think he's hoping to get some sort of result that would make it easier, more politically palatable, to pardon. For example, if he got a hung jury here, he could, you know, use as an excuse that he doesn't, you know, he thinks it's outrageous that Mueller is going to try to go for a second trial in that case or something like that.
Yeah.
Give an excuse to make it easier to do.
Right. And my sense is that's what we would get. All right. Renato, enjoy your weekend. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
Renato.
It.
Good hearing from you.
Thank you.
Renato Mariotti, who's a CNN analyst, and you can find him here in Chicago as a lawyer.
Yep.
All right, let's find out from Judy Pilak, not a lawyer, what's coming up in the news at the top of the hour.
And I do not play one on this show.
I do.
The latest on the hot coffee assault in California.
Oh, mm-hmm. Violetta. Billy Joel tickets coming your way after 5 o'clock. WGN.
Come out, Virginia. Don't let me wait. You Catholic girl, start.
You know,
nicely done.
I have to say that Cheesy DJ took the day off yesterday out of respect for Aretha Franklin. Actually, we gave him the day off.
Yeah.
When you say we gave him the day off, does that mean he just passed out drunk and we couldn't wake him up and get him to a shift on time?
I gave him an extra bottle of Jack Daniels.
Have yourself a fun night.
Right. I also took the bullets out of his revolver.
Good.
In his suitcase.
Good move. Thinking ahead, right?
Mm-hmm. And took his cans away from him, too. Those are the three things he's got.
Cans.
He's lost without those.
Mm-hmm.
Does he show up at like bars with his cans on or
around
his headphones?
The neck, for sure.
Just around the neck. Yeah, just got off work. No big deal.
No big deal. It's just on the radio.
He's got those big old metal headphones, too. Those Cost Pro 4 AAs that weigh each ear weighs 30 pounds.
Right. They're like 3-4 inches wide.
We did not want to. Too much sadness in the air yesterday about Aretha Franklin.
Wouldn't have been right.
Yeah, so we sent him home. He's a little groggy in the DJ lounge here though, and he's kind of waking up. So we may be hearing from him before it's all said and done.
Thanks for warning us.
Yeah, I know. It's worth the warning, if you know what I mean.
He's been chain smoking in there. If you walk by the lounge, there's like a huge cloud of smoke pouring out.
I was wondering what that was. I thought someone burned something in the microwave.
No. He smokes. He's the only guy who's allowed to smoke. He says he's grandfathered in.
Oh.
He smokes and chews tobacco simultaneously, too. He doesn't get enough. But he's also chomping on a Nicorette the whole time.
He's trying.
He's got a lot going on here. All right. Well, you got WGN News coming in 2 minutes. Tom Skilling appears courtesy of Permaseal Basement Systems.
Yes.
I like when they say that in movies, you know, it's sort of like or on an album cover.
Feel very important, don't you, Tom?
I do indeed.
Billy Preston appears
courtesy of Arista Records. That's very important.
Arista borrowed him to
us?
Yes. There's a name. Haven't heard that name for a while. Billy Preston.
Not sure I know who
he
is.
He's the fifth Beatle.
Yeah.
You don't know who Billy Preston is?
Well, now that you put it in that context, I do. It's not a name that I'm
trying to think what
about.
That shingle he had that was so popular back in the 70s. And I can't think of the name of it, Ro. You probably
know. Yes. I had Billy's album. Billy did a couple of albums. He's a studio musician.
Yes.
Who is a piano. He is a pianist. And he appeared on, I think, Abbey Road and Let It Be. He also appeared with the Rolling Stones on stage. He was their keyboardist with the Rolling Stones on tour in the 1970s. Now you stop and you just think about something for just a moment there. Just stop and think about that for a second. Here's a guy, an American kid, who ends up playing for both the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
How about that?
Amazing.
Stop and
You've lived your life.
About that.
Yes. Yes. Pretty impressive,
Beyond. For a musician, does it get better? Pretty crazy.
It is. Well, you know, Gary Wright, now, he played with George Harrison, right?
Yeah.
He was one of the studio musicians, and of course, he had a career all of his own as well.
We've even stumped. This is unbelievable. We've even stumped our son, a genius, Billy Preston.
Really?
I cannot believe.
Did Brian Altimer's on my team? He didn't know.
He knows who he is, but he's like, I don't remember what the song was.
That's right. I'm thinking this.
Let me see. I'm cheating here.
Yeah, I'm doing it too because I mean I know this song starts with this piano intro.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like it's like the. Yeah,
there it is.
Yeah,
that's it. Da, 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 da.
My friends,
classic.
I've got a song that ain't got no melody. I'm gonna sing it to my friends. When I go round in circles.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now I feel better.
You know, it's interesting.
Billy's no longer with us, by the way.
Is that right? Yeah. He passed away.
He passed away at the age of 60 back in the mid 2000s.
Wow. You know, it's incredible. With Aretha Franklin's passing yesterday, it brings you back. I remember my early disc jockey days in college and, played Aretha's songs, played Billy Preston. And wow, you really feel you're getting old when these people pass away. That's a sign that, A, you're mortal, and B, you're losing people you've grown up with and whose music you've loved.
Yeah.
Well, and 76 doesn't seem like the right age either. I don't know.
No.
She was dealing with pancreatic cancer, and that can be a very cruel, cruel thing to fight.
It's true. I have a fellow who lives in our building who's a cousin of Marvin Hamlisch, and when Marvin Hamlisch passed away, they had a funeral out in New York, and Aretha came and sang at that. Wow. And I remember them telling me that. And, Bill Clinton was there. I mean, it was like a who's who in the entertainment world.
Well, that's because Barbara Streisand was out of her mind about it. As you'll recall at the concert, Tom, when we were there.
When you guys cried at the Barbara Streisand concert?
He had just passed away, and she did a tribute to him.
I know.
And it was, moving. I was got a dry eye in
the
house.
That's true.
There were a few, but yours weren't dry. And I still think that's cute. I think it's so sweet that you guys cried at that.
She did it at the Grammy Awards that year, too. I remember, and that was a rare appearance for her. At least that's what was being said at the time. We've got to see Bart. But, you know, she said she's not going to tour anymore.
Oh, please.
I know.
They always say that.
I know.
It's always someone's last tour.
You know.
Until they run out of cash or she wants to build another house or whatever it is.
Anna, there are at least two or three additional cries in us, you know.
Get them all out. Bring them to the surface. It feels good.
I know.
Good.
Yeah, we can work it out.
I always thought artists did that because they want to jack up the prices, right? Because it's like a $250 ticket becomes a $500. Like, this could be the last time we ever see her in concert.
I know.
Or ever cry at her concert.
No, it's true. And that voice. I mean, it's as magnificent now as it was years ago. I remember her talking about appearing on Judy Garland's show, and she said that when she shook her hand, Judy Garland was shaking. And she
said,
from
the Bennies.
It might have been.
Yeah.
My mother loved Judy Garland, and she always was very mad about what had been done to her. Pills to sleep, pills to get up for the shows, and my mother always felt that the higher-ups knew what was going on and should have intervened and stopped it, you know?
Yeah, there's something to that.
Yeah, yeah. But I... Barbara made the comment that I heard her in an interview, and she said, you know, I realized... She was at an age then when everybody was waiting for the voice to crack or some sign that, you know, the voice wasn't what it was. And she says, as artists, we always have ourselves, we're so critical of our own work and so worried that something's going to happen to our voice. And so she said she hadn't thought about that at the time, but in looking back in it retrospectively, this was something that she realized what was going on and felt bad about it.
Yeah. Well, coming back to the Aretha Franklin thing for a second, you saw that. It was really shocking, you know. Mm-hmm. You have all these images of her in concert, and then last year she came out, she did one last thing.
Yeah.
And
she was so
thin. Was thin, and so... gaunt, but made up, you know, so that she's basically, you know, she didn't look sickly other than how gaunt she was.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but you could still tell. I mean, something had, you know, gone terribly, terribly wrong.
Well, remember Steve Jobs, how he started to look, you know, even though he was dealing with pancreatic cancer as well. It started to become very gaunt and frail, even though his mind was great. I mean, he still was that guy we all knew. It was sad to see.
So true, Anna. You know, don't you marvel at the Aretha's energy?
I do.
You know? And to go out there in a public forum like that, where all eyes are on you, and you can't be feeling well.
No.
Right.
It's got to be hard to get up and do that.
And she was such a perfectionist about everything. I remember it was maybe 4 years ago, she was here in Chicago at the Chicago Theater. And she did, we learned yesterday, one of the reasons that she was here quite a bit was she considered this to be her second home because Mahalia Jackson was from here. Jesse Jackson was from here. The people that she spent time with.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always playing here because it's also a four-hour drive from Detroit where she lived, and she would not fly anywhere. She did not fly.
That's interesting.
So
she
was constantly... playing in Chicago and Cincinnati and Cleveland and obviously Detroit when she could, and Pittsburgh, and places that were easy to get to.
That makes sense.
You know, for her. And every once in a while she would go to New York, and she would hate it. because she would have to, you know, and she'd stay at the Ritz-Carlton, we learned, and she'd throw a big birthday party there and then go back. Very rarely ever spent any time in Los Angeles, because once you get back to the eastern half of the United States, she was like, I'm not going back.
For driving, it's a long haul.
Annie Lennox, when she came in to do Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves,
mm-hmm.
Which was, you know, one of Aretha's biggest hits and one of Annie Lennox's biggest hits. Yeah. Annie Lennox had to go to Detroit to do it and shoot the video and all of that, yeah. You know, because they were going to London to do it. So she had this whole thing. And so she was here quite a bit. And she was at the Chicago Theater, I would say, probably, you know, like three nights in maybe 2013, 2014, something like that. And she... There were all these stories about mm-hmm. her, and that, you know, made the gossip columns that she was difficult, and you know, the air conditioning wasn't right in the room, and she didn't like what was going on. She had there's certain ways that she had to perform, and I stopped and I thought about that, and I'm like, you know what, if you're Aretha Franklin,
yeah,
and you're going to go on stage, and when the people leave the theater, now we're not talking about rehearsal.
Yeah.
You know, people leave the theater when the whole thing is said and done, mm-hmm. and it's a perfect performance. You can do whatever you want in the rehearsal, right? I mean, if you want to if you want to get mad at the heating cooling guy because he doesn't have it at the exact right temperature,
sure.
then get it right.
Get it right so
but
that
you
feel
what,
comfortable.
You know what else, too? That's a tough life. To be on the road and all. You know, we listen to these demands or requests made of these artists, and we think, well, what a bunch of egotists. And it's not that at all. That's hard to live out of a hotel and be on the road and get somewhere. I think as we get older, we realize that, and I don't think it's unreasonable. You know, I can almost understand where that comes from.
Well, they also got ripped off for so many years on the road when they were coming up.
Yeah.
That they're
Good
getting
point.
Even
Good
with
point.
All of the promoters and the
yeah.
concert venues and all the people that treated them like crap when they were little artists.
Right.
And now you're like, you know what you can do now?
Yeah.
You're going to pick out the green M&Ms for me, pal.
Right.
That's what you're going to do.
Long writer.
Yeah.
Go
That's
read
true.
The whole writer.
You want me there?
You're going to treat me well.
I want Heineken yeah. Light, not Amstel
That's
Light.
That's right.
I want Heineken Light in 12-ounce bottles.
And you know what
light
else?
Free.
You know what else, Ro? This concern about flying and all. Think of the artists who went down in planes. I mean, Otis Redding.
Yeah,
and,
but not for a long time, though. Not for a long time has that happened.
No, that's true. It's been a long time.
Aviation has changed. And I mean, you got to stop and think about what those guys were flying in. There's a Lynyrd Skynyrd movie out right now, a documentary coming out about their life.
Mm-hmm. I want to see
and
that.
And about what that was
that
all about.
Good.
And they talk about the plane. And, you know, they in the movie Almost Famous, mm-hmm. which is sort of loosely based on a bunch of bands, Led Zeppelin and Lynyrd Skynyrd sort of together,
mm-hmm.
that the plane scene is a direct ode to them. Because they needed them to fly on these rickety private planes that were just, you know, that some guy was, you know, they went to a guy charter service. One guy owned it. They didn't have all of the kind of compliance rules, or they weren't keeping the proper logs and doing that stuff. So some of these guys were flying right into thunderstorms because they had to get from one place to the next.
Gee. Well, that's the thing. You're on a deadline, and so
you got to get there.
You got to get there. And
right.
so you'll stretch it to the limit because... Think of trying to cancel a concert.
But they prefer the bus.
Yeah,
I mean, and I don't...
I thought it was just less expensive, and so you wouldn't take so much from your actual earnings.
I think the bus is... I mean, if you're going to fly in a rickety little aircraft or the bus, and you're only 2-3 hours... Your tour, you're only 2-3 hours from each stop. Mm-hmm. They're routing your tour that way. I've heard tell that the bus is a better way to go. And I don't understand how they all do it, but they do. And they get on it and, you know, they fall asleep. They've got these buses that have, like, you know, like submarine bunks on them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they go to sleep and they wake up in the next town. They go to a hotel, generally, in the next town. They, you know, they take a shower. They get they get kind of ready. They stay there for a day or two. And then they get back on the bus and just kind of move it. And at least all their stuff is together.
Yeah.
They're not having to go through... security. They're not necessarily, you know, if they're flying commercial, which some bands do. And then even if you're flying on the rickety old aircraft, then it's like, oh God, when you get on the ground, you got to get on something to get to wherever you're going. Everything's
sure.
on the bus.
Yeah. No, I can understand that completely. I was just looking at, like Otis Redding went down in Lake Monona. I remember up in
Minnesota,
Madison.
Oh, Madison, right.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah.
And then John Denver went down, remember, in some kind of experimental aircraft?
Yeah, well, that was his fault. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, obviously he passed away, but he was, that was his doing, and it was an experimental aircraft, and he wasn't, apparently cut off one of the engines, or
was
he cut off
like
the engine.
The way we see Harrison Ford having his accidents?
Yes, right. Yes.
Crashing
like
at golf
stop
courses.
Flying.
Perfect, a
stop
perfect
flying.
Example of that.
I know.
But you'd have Lynyrd Skynyrd in a, you know, in a tour plane. Obviously, you had the, you know, the whole, you know, Big Bopper and that, you know, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Night the Music Died kind of thing. And that song went on as long as anybody's career. So it is. I mean, there was an era, but I think now it's very different. They're flying different kind
That's
of equipment when they do. And,
yeah.
I'm telling you, most of them still stay on the bus. Once they've landed and they're doing a routing tour,
yeah.
It's just easier.
Yeah.
Because the trucks are moving, and the trucks, you know, the show doesn't get there until the trucks get there, and sometimes they hopscotch the trucks ahead. But
you know, Anna, he's very tough on these crash victims. You know,
I am.
Really,
I'm blaming the victim.
I mean, not a moment of sympathy.
Oh,
that was his fault.
Yeah. Well, I mean, John Denver. I mean, get out of your. I mean, and it's Air and Water Weekend. You know, so
yeah,
I want to be very
right.
nice to the experimental people.
Yes,
but as Jim Tillman once told me, he goes. Yeah. You can get just as dead in a little plane as you can in a big
sure
plane.
You sure can.
And it's like, if you're
true.
Not a pilot who flies every day.
I know.
It's you got to really be careful about what you're doing.
Oh, which makes that landing on Lakeshore Drive last week or the week before even more miraculous,
doesn't
isn't it?
It? Just that nobody on the ground was hurt. Oh. He's okay.
And
oh,
you listen to this conversation with the control tower. He's so down to business and so relaxed. I mean, I'd be there saying, "Hey, hey!"
One of the many jabs I could not
do.
Yes.
Know.
Ever.
That's like the folks who don't have the instrument rating and lose their orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a half-hour weather show up in Alaska they play, and then they do little public service announcements in the middle of it to break it up some. And they have stuff from the FAA, and they played some audio tapes of new, unexperienced pilots getting into IFR conditions and losing track of where they are, what's up and what's down, and not used to running the instruments. And it's horrifying to hear that. I mean, you know, you can appreciate the panic these people.
Oh, well, JFK Jr.
Exactly.
You want to go through
another one.
Let's just go through the greatest hits of celebrity air disasters. But that's the one. That's a perfect example of a guy who should not have been flying that plane that night under those conditions.
Absolutely.
And there's no question, if you've ever looked at the dusk, the horizon at dusk, you lose where the water begins in the sky.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's landing on a little island, and it's dark and it's raining, and he's got a broken ankle, and he's
trying to do.
And you know, it turns out that you know the rudders are a fairly important part of flying the airplane.
Yeah,
you actually control with your feet. And then he's got his wife yelling at him, and then there's cocaine in the back. And you're like, shut up!
Didn't seem like the perfect conditions for a flight.
Right. And you're in a little bit of a crowded airspace out there, too, around New York City. You know,
That's why Aretha Franklin didn't like to fly.
Exactly. And this is why. Exactly. That, thank you. Oh, my God.
She last performed live in our area, by the way, guys, Ravinia, last year.
Wow. They say she really loved Ravinia. She loved the format and everything.
A lot of people love that, yeah.
Chicago used to sit by the Buckingham Fountain and just look at the beautiful water, so people didn't even bother her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that right, Anna? That's very cool.
Isn't it? She just loved to take it in. Seemed like that kind of person who loved life.
Sometimes when you see somebody and you go, isn't that? Oh, no, it couldn't possibly be.
She wouldn't be there by herself. Right. Where's the hat? Right. The big rhinestone hat. So that's not her.
Yeah, that's not her. Yeah.
But they're in casual clothes. You don't know.
All right, great weekend ahead.
It is going to be a beautiful weekend.
That's all we need to know.
Yep.
Right?
Gorgeous.
That's it. And 80s, sunny.
Yeah, a little lake
Saturday
breeze.
Yeah.
Just to make things. The wind will be a little stronger tomorrow. It might be a chop on the lake for the Mariners tomorrow. There's a northeast wind.
Oh, are they in town?
That should. What's that?
The people on the water. Okay,
yes.
I got it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you.
The Seattle Mariners.
I see.
I knew when I was going a little joke there. All right.
I'm sorry. That went right over my head.
We got to go.
All right.
Bye, Tom.
Go. Bye, Anna.
Bye.
See you later.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Happy Friday.
Let's check in with Judy. What's coming up in a few minutes?
Failures at all levels of Chicago public schools in preventing and responding to sexual misconduct.
Violetta? Coming up after 5 o'clock, I got Billy Joel tickets.
Nice. Do you have any friends with a boat that could take us all out for the Air and Water show? You might be able to hook that up.
That's a great idea.
Isn't it?
Preferably a yacht.
Yeah, very big boat with a lot of things that Judy might need on it.
Not one of those electric, you know, boats that you could rent here.
I know, so Kevin ran away from his microphone right now. I think he's doing that tomorrow.
Oh, he's doing it
by himself. He's not doing it with us. It's interesting that we're all kind of freelancing.
Yeah.
On our own
fanning out a little.
Yeah, and our own tricks. We're applying our own tricks to the trade to see the Air and Water show.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Roper is here, brought to us by Arkadeck. And I would ask you this: do you have a trick for the Air and Water show?
Usually involves being about 120 to 130 miles away from Air and Water. I love it. But as Roan knows, Anna probably knows this too.
Yes.
For years, I had one of those perches, you know, where you could wave to the pilots or row or Violette or whoever's jumping out of the plane that day, which was great. But then you were obligated to have parties every year, so it got to the point where I could go 3, 2, 1, Lima, Lima. You know, you would, so I, it's just it's a, taking a little break from it.
Good.
But it's still a spectacular, as
it is.
I think.
It is a spectacular.
So you all enjoy it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I find this.
We're still showing up your house for a party.
You still have the key
That's
under
okay.
the mat, Anna, at your place.
You're right.
I mean, the flower pot. Oh, never mind.
I just do think it's one of those things that it sells this city better than almost anything else that we do.
Mm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It just is. Yeah. The city looks so amazing, and the people who come in for it. I know all over downtown here, hotels are filling up.
Sure,
it brings a lot of people in that
it
are
does.
Crews and you know that work this whole circuit. But then sure. there are if you like to go to air shows, it very few, if any,
mm-hmm.
compare to this.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So, because it used to be the Air and Water Show, and mm-hmm. it's still technically, I guess, the Air and Water Show.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid.
Remember the water skiing and stuff?
Yes, there was water skiing. And my favorite thing, this was the best part, because it was a 6-hour day.
Uh-huh.
And it started at 10 in the morning, and it would end at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now it's still 10 to 3. It's a 5-hour day, but it's differently stacked than it was. There would literally be a race, because the show center used to be at Chicago Avenue, at the field house mm-hmm. at Chicago Avenue, because
right.
the guy who's Al Benedict, who was the guy who started the whole thing,
Al.
was the ward Big superintendent
what a shocker
for the 42nd ward, the Park District thing.
Uh-huh.
So he had he would have all the lifeguards would take part in a 1-mile open water race.
Wow!
Right. Or I guess 500-meter open mile race. So it'd be a third of a mile.
Remember this? Was that?
I don't remember.
I sort of.
And they would get in the water at the Ohio Street Beach.
Jeez.
Uh-huh.
And then they would swim. People still do this swimming, which I don't understand.
Sure, it's amazing.
You know, there are sharks in that water, aren't
uh-huh.
there? And they would swim to pass the Chicago Avenue reviewing stand,
mm-hmm.
and it would take like 20 minutes.
Uh-huh. And that's all you'd get to look
Incredible.
At for that
and
period of time.
And then they would call it. Like, you know, there was some kind of, and there was, you know, each lifeguard was from a different beach.
Mm-hmm. So they'd compete.
Lawrence Avenue Beach in the lead right now. Oh, that's Wilson. I'm sorry. Wilson Avenue Beach in the lead right now. You know, like, there's no, uh-huh. this makes no sense. And then you're waiting, like, when are they going to bring the airplanes back?
Well, I always thought they needed like a Rokan to do the play-by-play, too, because
perfect.
There's a certain station, not this one, that I don't know if they still do
I
it.
I did but, do it once.
Did you do it once?
Yeah, I did it once.
Because a lot of times it would just be very competent, straightforward news anchors at a certain station.
Yes.
So they'd be like, WZZZ News Time, 908, traffic and weather coming up in about 30 seconds. In the meantime, there's some planes, we believe, in the sky.
All right, well, let me tell you something.
It's a tough gig.
I'm going to go the other way on this one. I did it with a co-host. For one or two seasons,
mm-hmm.
we tried to compete with that with BBM's coverage of it when we were over at WLS, and we got a lot of help from the city. We got a lot of help, and we had a great perch, but we only had one place to watch it. And then BBM's got the people up and down the beach, and they got people out at the airport and everything where it's taking up. I have to say that Pat Cassidy, I think, does an amazing job, and Chris Habermill.
Yeah.
Is an aviation badass.
See, I was talking about way before them. See, they're genius. I'm talking about when I was a kid.
That's
like
true.
Like in the 40s, I'm talking about.
Channel
I'm not talking
7.
About our current colleagues. They're wonderful.
Channel 7
mm-hmm.
used to do a studio show from the air show. It's not like the half hour that Jerry Taft used to do, you know, where he's like, I don't know what's going on now. This is, and that's recorded, and he didn't know what was going on. This was a live show where they set up those, like, you know, the bucket chairs that swivel, like the Oprah set.
Yes.
On Chicago Avenue, on the pavement there at Chicago Avenue, on a big, you know, sort of raised stage at Show Center, and they would do a 4 or 5 hour show while this thing is in the air. Live cameras and everything.
Spectacular.
Oh, my God.
Can't get out there to watch it.
Well, you actually also couldn't follow it either, because the camera guys couldn't follow what was going
on. It's like covering hockey. They always miss the goal.
And it was always, and it's guys like.
Did you get it?
Right. Well, let's do that replay. No, we don't have replay. It was back before there was replay.
Yeah. Didn't get it.
Yeah, it didn't make a ton of sense. But it was on the TV. Anyway, now you get to see the half hour distillation. It's never as much fun on TV, though. Like watching a plane in the sky.
No, it's you gotta feel it. You feel it.
And actually, it's fun to try to catch the plane. Sometimes, if you know, like, oh my God, there they go, and try to anticipate the sound ratio to the.
Where is it?
Yeah, that's part of the fun.
But also, that you feel it in your gut when they make that turn.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Or just, you know, when they hang there, like the guy we had on yesterday, if you remember, when they just sort of hang in the air and they're just like, oh, is it gonna be okay? How does he do that?
The military jet that does that, the actual one that actually hovers, the Harrier, is the loudest thing you're ever going to be near. Right. And it comes, you know, right next to the, and they try to tell you to you know, keep your ears closed. Mm-hmm. But it's not easy.
It's not.
And all I can think about is, thank God I'm on their side. At least I think I'm on their side.
Before you moved to New Zealand.
So it was on their side until the president decided I'm not on their side.
Yeah.
I don't like that part. All right. Can we get to some movies
here? Yeah, let's do it.
I don't know why we're talking about this. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Why don't we start with Crazy Rich Asians? Because people have been talking about this for months and months. The first major studio movie with an Asian-focused cast in 25 years. The last time it happened was The Joy Luck Club in 1993. Crazy Rich Asians is based on a novel. It's actually the first of a trilogy. And it's actually kind of a very classic, old-fashioned story. Henry Golding plays Nick. He comes from perhaps the wealthiest family in all of Singapore. Constance Wu is his girlfriend, Rachel. They've met and fallen in love in New York. She has no idea of the amount of wealth he has. But now his cousin's getting married, so he thinks maybe it's time for them to visit the family.
Singapore for spring break. Colin's wedding. We've been dating for over a year now, and I think it's about time people met my beautiful girlfriend. Come on. I'm Colin's best man. Don't you want to see where I grew up? Meet my family, my ama. I meet up with that strange college roommate of yours.
Picklin.
Mm-hmm. Picklin.
She has been begging me to come visit her, you know.
The universe has spoken. It wants you over there. Come to Singapore. I want the whole island to meet the brilliant Rachel Chu.
Aww.
And off they go. Now, Henry Golding, who plays Nick there, the British accent is because in the movie he's educated at Cambridge and, you know, very international. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. Constance Wu, you might recognize her voice. She's from Fresh Off the Boat. She's the hilarious mom.
That was
Fresh
very,
off the boat.
Very well done, that.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and she's wonderful. And Henry Golding is an interesting casting choice because he's actually someone who is like an international travel host, not really coming from an acting background. But his background kind of fits the background of this character, you know, sort of culture clashing, you know, raised in Singapore, but then educated in Britain, now living in America. And it's a brilliant casting choice because we haven't seen him in anything before.
Yeah.
And he's like a Cary Grant on screen, just classically handsome. And they've got wonderful chemistry together. And then they off they go to Singapore for all kinds of adventures. And, of course, his mother, Michelle Yeoh, the great actress, remember her from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and millions of other things,
right.
Of course, thinks no one could ever be, you know, good enough for her son, especially not this American, you know. So there's a lot about the kind of feeling displaced. So Constance Wu's Rachel doesn't quite feel always at home here in the United States, and then goes to Asia and also doesn't feel quite at home because they, you know, the culture there doesn't quite recognize her. And then you just get into the classic kind of fish out of water thing. And Ken Jeong, the great Ken Jeong, the comic actor, he plays the dad of her best friend. Awkwafina plays the best friend. She's hilarious. So you got the comic relief. Then you got the beautiful costumes, the incredible, you know, sights of one of the world's, you know, great cities, and this lovely romance. I think it's a terrific movie. I'm giving Crazy Rich Asians 3.5 stars.
Wow.
And it's just the kind of movie we need at the end of the summer. You can go with mom, you can go with the boyfriend, you can go with the husband, you can go with the family. And although it is obviously about culture clashes, it's such a familiar story. I mean, it's every princess story you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, every story about the mother-in-law
yeah.
who doesn't think the daughter's good enough, all of that great stuff. And you're just looking at some of the world's best-looking people in some of the world's best-looking locations. Well, you know, how can you go wrong?
I saw Nir Vardalos tweet out, and I think you commented on too, Richard, about, she said, to everyone who gave a chance to my big fat Greek family yeah. story, go ahead and give
exactly.
this family's story, this, you know, extended family story a chance as well, because it's, she
yeah.
wows you.
And, you know, this movie was not easy to get made because of, you know, Hollywood's still resistant to this thing. And first they're saying, well, maybe it'll make 10 or 12 million. I think it's going to make about 20 to 25 million
wow.
its opening weekend.
Because
it's got great reviews and such goodwill. And the cast has been out there like crazy, you know, enjoying themselves and promoting it. And it's everything like the Mamma Mia tried to be and wasn't, you know, where you go, okay, mm-hmm. you don't have to take any of this seriously. It's a soap opera, but it's just so much fun. And it's really funny, too.
Is it? So does it take itself seriously?
Not, you know, there's some heavy moments, of course, and there's going to be some, you know, dramatic tension, and there's some villains in there, but just more than anything else, you do really want to
Crazy
see it on a big screen.
Rich Asian,
yes.
3.5 stars.
Go see it.
And come back and see what else is worth seeing this weekend at the movie theater if you want to. But if you go to the movie theater downtown, you'll hear the jets going over your head. There's nothing you can do about it. Oh my God! Is there an air attack in this movie? No.
Just the Mission Impossible. So it'll kind of just add to the experience.
There you go. All right. We're back with Richard, but first let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
The mayor of D.C. floating her own argument over Trump's military parade.
Violetta.
Then there's this. Listen to the Steve Cochran Show Monday morning. Steve Stone joins the show with his perspective on the White Sox and the rest of baseball.
Richard Roper is here. We're doing some reviewing.
Yes, yes, yes.
All right. 3.5 stars for Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes.
And
check it out.
Now, Mile 22.
So Mile 22, you know Peter Berg, the director who did the TV show Friday Night Lights, and then he always mm-hmm. loves to team up with Mark Wahlberg for Lone Survivor, then the Deepwater Horizon movie, then the Boston
movies.
Marathon movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time they've teamed up for a movie that's not based on a true story. Mark Wahlberg plays the obligatory leader of a group of CIA operatives who are so far off the grid, there's not even a grid. You know, they don't even exist,
yeah.
of course,
uh-huh.
right? John Malkovich is their boss because he's supposed to be the boss of a group like that. So the whole movie is basically they're in some war-torn country in Asia, and Wahlberg and his team have to get this asset, this guy who has the secret file, because there's always a secret file, just like there was a Mission Impossible. And that secret file will reveal the location of this deadly gas that can kill 80 million people. So they got to get him out of the country, get him onto an American plane. And it's a 22-mile route from where the guy is to the plane. So mile 22. And the entire rest of the movie is them trying to go to the 22 miles without getting blown up, beaten up, stabbed, shot, killed. Wahlberg's character is a very intense guy who has some issues from his childhood. He's a very intense. He's so nuts that he makes Jason Bourne look like a guy who's a very stable genius. Here's Mark Wahlberg in this movie.
That's my asset.
Who is he?
Lee Noor.
I don't want to know his name. I don't know what he does for a living. I want to know who is he.
A loner. No kids, no family, 100% accurate and reliable.
You mark him or he mark you?
I marked him.
He says he has the exact locations of all 6 sets of season. He's locked it on a disc. He says only if we get him out of the country and give him asylum will he open the disc.
You gonna deal with this or you want me to handle it?
I got it.
This is serious, right?
Oh, very.
Mm-hmm. That's Lauren Cohn, who plays Maggie on The Walking Dead, who's also in this movie, and Ronda Rousey. So it's kind of a gender equality. You know, they're all in the fights, too.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with this movie is it's just all action, and everybody talks really fast like that. So they're trying to make it seem like, oh, wow, this is like David Mamet. Oh, yeah. But they're not really ever saying anything. And it's like it's really well photographed. It's unbelievably grisly. There are some kills in here and some stabbings and some shootings and, you know, like a guy
guy's head in the window of the car, and then you roll the window up, and then the glass edges are going to the guy's neck, and then there's crackling bones. But there's nothing to it other than that. It's like watching someone else play a video game. Now, you're not getting to play it. You just have to watch it, so it will give you a headache. Mm-hmm. 2 stars for Mile 22. Disappointing.
That is.
I've liked everything else these guys have done, but this and the story, it's just, there's actually a moment where a guy goes, is he a double agent or a triple agent? If you have to utter that line in one of these spy thrillers, you know, it's sort of a, you know, a Mission Impossible knockoff, if you will.
Okay. All right, so we won't.
Skip that.
Yeah, we won't. We're going to go see Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes.
It's Mamma Mia without the singing.
With a brain.
Without one particular person, Pierce Brosnan singing. Remember that?
Where did you hear me, darling? Can you hear me?
Steve Cochran Show celebrates most valuable person. Oh my gosh, I got a break. Oh, I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize to everybody the affiliates down the line. Mm-hmm. Stand by right here. We've got Judy's News coming your way in 2 little minutes. Rocacho with Anna DeVellantis, yes. Right here, 720 WGN. Here is Richard Roper. It is a Friday, so
happy Friday.
That's a good sign. We've reviewed a couple of movies, and Crazy Rich Asians, 3.5 stars.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go see it.
A lot of fun.
Go
enjoy
see it. And speaking of Crazy Rich Asians, Tai Dang is going to be here. He is a chef and owner, along with Danielle's wife, of Hai Su Vietnamese Kitchen in Pilsen. Mm. I know what you're thinking.
What?
I know.
What is happening?
Don't get
now?
Me started. Don't get me started. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, is it in Pilsen? Yes.
It's in Pilsen.
Pilsen.
Great restaurants in Pilsen. And
this is one of the best restaurants in America right
Ooh.
Now.
Mm. My
this
goodness.
Is crazy great. Crazy
wow.
great.
Yeah. You got me. All right.
So we'll tell you about that coming up.
I'm excited
as well.
About
he's
that.
Got he has one of the most amazing personal stories
really?
You are ever going to hear.
Oh,
so
all right.
It is
I'm sticking
and,
around
and how he got to America and how he started this restaurant and all that. It's just it's amazing, amazing.
Will it bring
amazing.
Us to tears?
Part of it will. Yes.
Oh,
part of it will. It's the great. It is one of the great American stories.
Oh, how nice!
And it's the kind of story that you know. I just hope that the president's watching Fox News while we're Jeez. Talking about it.
Oh boy!
Not listening on the internet. All right, here we go.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number 5.
All right, hold on 1 second. I'm going to duck.
What's going on?
In light of the president revoking the security clearance of former CIA director John Brennan, reporters asked the president today whether or not that is a move to silence the critics.
There's no silence. If anything, I'm giving him a bigger voice. Many people don't even know who he is, and now he has a bigger voice, and that's okay with me because I like taking on voices like that. I've never respected him. I've never had a lot of respect. And Senator Burr said it best, if you knew anything, why didn't you report it when you were before all of these committees, including their committee? So he had a chance to report. He never did. This was just came up lately, and it's a disgusting thing, frankly.
Came up lately?
What?
They started the investigation in June of 2016.
Well, you know, he said the key phrase there. A lot of people didn't know who he was because someone had to remind him, like, last week. A lot of people didn't know Lincoln was Republican.
He was asked his thoughts on the Manafort trial, and this, I think, is a little unusual. I understand the politics of everything else, but the jury is out in this trial, and he's weighing in on it.
I don't talk about that now. I don't talk about that now. I think the whole Manafort trial is very sad when you look at what's going on there. I think it's a very sad day for our country. He worked for me for a very short period of time, but you know what? He happens to be a very good person. And I think it's very sad what they've done to Paul Manafort. Thank you very much.
In response to that, Manafort's own attorney says, great to have the support of the President of the United States.
Oh, my God.
3.5 stars for Crazy Rich Asians playing in theaters now.
Well, and the jury, as you point out, Rose, not sequestered. They're going home, and we'll hear all about this
week.
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh, my God. Oh. I mean, someone go to jail in Cook County for doing that. Right? Someone, they would lock up a lawyer if he did that. They'd lock up the Attorney General of the United States if he did that. Actually, Donald Trump would like that.
Very weak.
Lock him up.
All right, hold on.
Number four.
Well, you started with that at number five. Now what?
Tucker Carlson.
Oh, jeez.
Went on an odd taco tangent during a discussion of Mexican restaurants in Houston, facing criticism for posting an image of Attorney General Jeff Sessions eating there last week and saying it was an honor to serve him. El Tiempo Cantina deleted its social media accounts as the backlash grew, and some called for a boycott. In a segment with Univision anchor Enrique Acevedo, Carlson, who is perplexed by the controversy, seemingly feeling as if his right to eat a taco was under attack.
I'm totally opposed to illegal immigration. I think that our legal immigration level should be lower because the country's getting too volatile. Those are my sincere views. I also like Mexican food since I grew up on the Mexican border. Should I be allowed to eat Mexican food?
No, no. You know, this is, I think, what people are pointing out, the contradiction of attacking someone's culture, someone's story, and then celebrating their food and celebrating
what you mean, their food? It's American
food. What they find convenient to celebrate about their story.
Well, you think you own tacos now or something?
Oh, gosh.
He's stealing my act, by the way, by going up to
office. Yeah.
So I feel like they're an American food, and I'm going to keep eating them, even though I agree with Jeff Sessions.
I'm glad you do. No, and I think everyone should. Tacos, guacamole, and you know, we should all celebrate each other's cultures. We feed off each other. It's
no.
What makes
what
us
mean, each
more,
other's cultures. You know, it's an American
diverse
food.
Diverse and stronger.
It's an American
feeding
food.
Off each other's
you're
cultures.
Not
borrowing
steal.
From
you're
each
not
other's cultures.
My
learning
culture.
From each other's
I'm
cultures.
I'm from San Diego, man. Those are my tacos. Mine.
Oh,
wow.
Very possessive of the tacos.
Yeah.
That sounds like me at 2 a.m. at a local Mexican. Those are my tacos, man. Nobody touch them.
I'm from San Diego, man. We've got the most moderate climb in all of the states. What you got?
I mean, what's that? I don't know. That seemed a little overly possessive of tacos that he doesn't own.
These are my tacos.
I used to live around the corner from El Tiempo when I lived in Houston.
Oh, I bet you they still have your picture on the wall there.
Excellent tacos.
From
and
when
their
you were
salsa
on TV
was
there.
Also outrageous.
They probably got Anna's picture up on the wall.
They might. I don't know. But I'd like to go back there and have some.
I don't understand what's happening in America. It's okay. I mean, ethnic food. It's okay to have ethnic food. We don't have to own everything. We don't. I mean, the taco is not. It is. It was. It's a Mexican food. They were not serving tacos in the United States.
I just have to say this very quickly, if you'll indulge me, Mr. Mean Streets of San Diego. Tucker Swanson McNear Carlson was born and lived in San Diego, the son of a news anchor who was also United States ambassador. His mother and his mother was an heiress, and his stepmother is the heir to the Swanson frozen food fortune.
Okay.
So he did grow up on the mean streets of San Diego.
Yeah.
And when you think tacos, you think Swanson frozen food.
They have tacos, I bet.
I'm from San Diego, man. I went to Trinity College, man. You want some of this?
I can only imagine.
Oh, my God. Wait, we drunk Trumped him because he deserves it.
Those are my tacos. Mine.
That's me. 2 a.m. at the local Mexican
That's what you're talking about, Kev.
Tacos.
Dumbass. All right. God's sake.
I went to St. George's Middle School, a boarding school. You want some of this?
We had tacos for lunch occasionally.
Man.
Not all just right. On Tuesdays.
Tucker, if you want the sloppy Joe, you can have it. All right. Why can't we just all get along? Why can't we respect the fact that and embrace the notion that people of different ethnicities can get along and we can enjoy each other's cultural contributions? Why can't we do that?
It's all American.
Thank you. Miss Serbia.
What's next?
2014.
Serbia's going to steal cabbage rolls from us next?
Yeah. We claim those, man, too, by the way.
Those are my cabbage rolls.
They're American.
Mrs. Podramatic. Don't take my cabbage rolls from me.
All right. May I... Wait, you know what? This is gonna, when you hear Ty's story, who's coming up, this is going to put everybody to shame. Everybody to shame.
Tougher upbringing than Tucker Carlson?
All these people who are trying to make a deal out of this.
All right. All right. Looking forward to that.
Okay. I'm sick and tired of this crap.
Wow. I know. Okay. Settle it once and for all.
Judy! Judy! Finally, I'm madder than Judy.
Don't be ridiculous. It's impossible.
What do you have coming up?
The condom, the pill, and now the smartphone?
Oh, yeah, I've used that. It works. It worked right in between. Clank. Here is Violetta.
Then we have this. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
All right, Top 5 at 5 continues. We're up to...
Number 3. I've had a little bit too much, too much. All of the
people start to rush, start to rush by. How does it twist the day? 10 years ago today, this album came out. Lady Gaga is 10 years old. How old do you feel now? It's like, if you had said to me, like, okay, that Lady Gaga album, what year did that come out? I got like, I don't know.
5 years
like
ago.
2012, 2013. It's 10 years ago.
10 years. I even feel old.
Sheesh, so do I.
10 years ago. And she's going to be in this new, they're remaking A Star is Born for the fourth time or fifth time now.
Fifth time. Bradley Cooper directs and co-stars. And have not seen it yet, but you feel like, oh, do we need to see? But I hear really good things about it, that she's a star.
Yeah, well,
on the screen.
Well, that's the whole point of A Star is Born, is that, you know, this girl kind of falls for this aging, whether it's an actor or a rock star, depending on the version you see, and she leapfrogs him.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
He helps her with her career, and she becomes the biggest thing ever. And how much booze can you consume to get over that? Mm. That's exactly what
that's
that movie,
movie
is about.
It's Christopherson and Barbara Streisand in 76.
Yep.
Hope Bradley Cooper wasn't inspired by Pierce Brosnan. I could sing, too.
Yeah, sure. Everyone can sing in Hollywood, right?
They have him. I've seen the trailer for it. They have him singing in it, and it sounds good.
He can sing and play a little bit, I think.
Is it really him?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right, because he does sound good in it.
Cool.
All right, coming up at
number 2.
New animated series from The Simpsons creator, Matt Groening, drops today on Netflix. Hmm. Disenchantment is what it's called. It explores the medieval world of Groening told... I don't know why we have to do a medieval world with him, but we're going to do it. That's what he's going to do.
Okay.
He told reporters that doing a show for Netflix allows him greater flexibility.
There are no rules that we have to adhere to. And unlike the network TV that we're used to, we don't have to stop every 7 minutes and break for a few commercials. So we can tell the whole story, and the stories are longer. A regular TV show is about 22 minutes with commercials, and our shows go up to a half hour. With those extra 7 or 8 minutes... Those are where the fun, crazy amounts of jokes come in.
Hmm. I gotta say, they did pretty well with the 22 minutes and the commercials.
Yeah,
and
it worked.
I don't really get the sense that they were really pulling any punches on The Simpsons for the last 30 years.
They could get away with so much just because it was animated.
Right. All right, and finally, stay tuned for this. Listen to this.
Number 1.
An unruly passenger was arrested last night on an Orlando-bound flight. The incident was caught on camera. This is Jeffrey Epstein. He is charged with battery on a law enforcement officer, resisting arrest, trespassing, after after he was told by people on board the plane that, you got to behave. Police were called after he began to yell when he saw officers arrive. And after talking with police, Epstein began to calm down, but then became agitated when he learned that the airline was not going to allow him to fly because of his behavior.
Do you know how to de-escalate things, a genius? No, you're not. Okay, you're talking about me foaming at the mouth. Is that going to de-escalate things, genius? Do you have training, genius? There's no alcohol. You want to test me? They're arresting me. I'm not. Do not hurt me. Look at them. Look at them. They're going to beat me up. Don't beat me up. Look at them. Oh, my God. I can't believe they're doing this. Oh, my God. Hey, look what they're doing.
Oh,
all right.
Dear.
So he's yelling and trying to intimidate the cops. They handcuff him. And he screams, "They're treating me like a black person." I have a date for him. I found a girl for him.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if Dr. Epstein is actually married, but I think that the thoroughbred white girl from last week
perfect.
Should date him. They'd be great together.
That'd be a great show.
Yes, the two of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Get people who've made fools of themselves together.
I want to know what prison's like.
On a show.
And Tucker Carlson can officiate.
Now, apparently he came off of, he came out of jail, and he talked to a TV station down in Orlando, WSEH, Channel 2, whatever. And this is what he said.
What did you mean by that?
I was making a point. You know, if you're going to do this to a white doctor who's 59 years old for doing nothing, then why should black people trust you?
Except we saw it on video. You know what you did.
He just keeps digging deep into like a white doctor as opposed to, you know, the blacks. I mean, it's not very helping himself there either, you know?
I'm a pretty white girl. Listen, I was in a sorority.
Great sorority, too.
I was in a sorority.
I'm a thoroughbred white doctor, and they did it to me. Imagine what they would do to, you know.
Oh, my God. What's happening?
The top five at five.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Leave me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life. And I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Don't beat me up!
Please, I've never been arrested.
Look at him! Oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this!
I don't want to know what it's like. I don't want to know what it's like. I'm a pretty girl.
Oh my God! Hey!
That's
what they're doing.
Please don't
make
me go in there.
Treat me like a black person.
There we go. Yes. That is the couple of the year right there. If they don't get a reality show, the guy who got arrested in Orlando and taken off an airplane and said the police are treating him like a black man, and the pretty white girl who was too pretty to go to jail in, where was that, in South Carolina?
South Carolina.
If we can't get those two together, there is no God.
They need to find each other.
Crazy rich Caucasians.
Yeah, that's what's going on right there. Hey, I have got to introduce the world. I know it's already been introduced to the world, but I'm going to take full credit for this, you know, when this becomes the number one Michelin restaurant in the world, which I think it one day will.
Yeah.
We have got Hai Su Vietnamese Kitchen and Cafe, Cafe Da, which is next door. We'll explain all of that. Okay. It's in Pilsen, 1800 South Carpenter, so 18th and Carpenter. Mm. And it is, don't just take my word for it. I think it's one of the best restaurants in the United States right now, but you'd say to me, you'd say, Ro, what other restaurants in the United States have you been to?
Well, you go to a lot of restaurants, so we'll give you credit for that.
Canard Wagon, by the way, being brought to you by, don't tell me, It's Just Lunch. There you go.
Nice.
So this is, exciting. One at the cafe would be a perfect place for It's Just Lunch a day, by the way. Just
there you go.
Just give the kids at It's Just Lunch a little heads up. Yeah. All right, now here's the deal. This restaurant is, don't take my word for it, take these words for it, recipient of Michelin's 2018 Bib Gourmand.
Wow.
James Beard Foundation, 2018 semifinalist as Best New Restaurant. And Eater Chicago Reader's Choice for Restaurant of the Year.
That's fantastic.
Okay. It's spectacular. And what I think Tai Dang has done here, the chef, has taken Vietnamese food in Chicago to a totally different level. So congratulations to you on that.
Congrats.
There's a fish there that I had that is the greatest fish I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
And I've had some fish in my life.
Yeah.
Then something not so good. This, amazing. And and it's a beautiful room. And, you know, you're in that, obviously, it's a crazy neighborhood now, right? I mean, it's like so hot with the restaurants.
Blowing up.
And it's everything that you could possibly look for up and down 18th Street. And when did you first open?
Well, we opened in the summer of June 21st, 2017.
20, all right.
So a year.
So just a little over a year. Just a little over a year.
I'm just sitting here lost for words for what Roald's just been saying about
well,
us. I'm just honored. We're just super honored.
All true.
Amazing.
My kids were telling me about this.
Yeah.
They were like, you got to try it.
You told me about it before we even had the money. You got to get out there. You got to go before everyone figures out this place is there.
I would like to not give the address. I'd like to send people somewhere else right now.
Can we call it by a different name just for purposes of this interview?
It is a reservation place right now. You got to do it. But you've got this cafe next door too, and you're doing this French Asian cafe. And it's really like, I mean, you grew up in Vietnam,
yes,
right?
I was born in Vietnam and left when I was 6 years old. And so, you know, we left in the late 80s under resettlement programs established by the U.S. government and the Vietnamese government. And we landed in Pattan, the Philippines, as refugees. And then we got sponsored by a Catholic organization and a nonprofit and landed in Champaign-Urbana in the winter of 1991.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, now,
explain,
that was fun.
Explain what the program was that brought you in. Because this is amazing. And when people are... I know there's so much politicization of immigration, all this crazy stuff that's going on right now. But your family got a little bit of a golden ticket here, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, with the war, you know, comes a lot of, social issues and then, you know, political issues. And also with that predicament, there was a program set out to help... fix this problem. There was a lot of single mothers with half American, half Vietnamese babies in Vietnam because
after the war.
After the war. Sure. And this program allowed us to leave Vietnam because my mom adopted a half Vietnamese and half American. He's my older brother. We still call him, you know, I still keep contact with him. But because of him, we were granted access to leave Vietnam.
And these were kids that were basically shunned, right?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
yeah.
These were kids that because after the war, the half-American kids who were, you know, born to these women either voluntarily and some of them not voluntarily, right?
Wow.
And so these kids were sort of, you know, they were non-persons, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's... Vietnamese, roughly translated to English, is like children of the dust, because they were left in the dust. This village was set up in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you talk about families and, you know, Vietnamese with the strong culture and then religion and everything, these single mothers were shunned into the woods. Mm-hmm. And so they established little town for themselves, and there were hundreds of them.
To bring these children, and this was a program to bring these kids back to the United States.
Mm.
Because they had no place.
Yeah.
And it was actually the Catholic Church that figured this out first, and then they got the U.S. government to go along with it and figure
it
out.
How about that?
And, you know, you think about all the politics of what happened to the Catholic Church in the Vietnam War and the North Vietnamese and all that. Now how vibrant Vietnam is as a unified country and, you know, sort of the vestiges of the war and the Red Scare and all that behind them. It is just an amazing story. And when you stop and you think about, you know, families that come into a community like Champaign, Illinois. Now, that's a pretty sophisticated place because of the university.
Yeah.
But it's still, you're going into the heartland of America, not speaking a lot of English, and you're literally bringing this young man back who has no idea, you know, that he's been fathered. He's got no place left but here because his father is a serviceman who may be dead, may be alive. There's no records to prove who these people are. Mm. It is the most amazing story.
And some families, you know, leave during the war, too, like boat, you know, you hear those boat stories and trying to escape, but, you know, we were very fortunate and left, you know, under this program, and it was very short time in the Philippines, but we were very fortunate to be sponsored, and some families have been in the Philippines for years.
And you got here and started working as a chef and worked your way up, and now have created one of the best restaurants in America right here in Chicago, and then that's the kind of a story that we should be telling as opposed to the stories of,
beautiful,
you know,
story.
Ripping babies out of people's arms. Mm. All right, stand by, hold on 1 second. I don't mean to get political, but it brings a tear to my eye, and I get really upset about it. But I really want to enjoy a an amazing cocktail in the food, and we'll talk about that right after this. Tai Dang is with us, and he is from Hai Su, Haisous, Vietnamese Kitchen, and Cafe Da. I'm not going to spell that for you because they do it in a funny way. It's right next door. You can't miss it. 18th and Carpenter in Chicago. But first, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Manafort's lawyer thanks Trump for his well wishes.
I bet he does. Violetta? Oh, look what I got right now in my hands.
What do you got?
I got tickets to see Billy Joel. To caller number 19, 312-981-7200. A pair of tickets to see Billy Joel Wrigley Field on September 7th. There are tickets on sale right now at Cubs.com/Billy Joel. He sold out the last 4 years. He will sell out this year as well. Go see him. Good luck. 312-981-7200. All right.
Nice.
So, Hai Su Vietnamese Kitchen is here. Mm-hmm. They are here for the Carnarvon Wagon. And we will continue this. We have a live band coming up in just a few minutes. Tai Dang is here. They're serving the food. We're going to talk about the food. We didn't really get a chance to get into it. We're telling your life story, how you got here, and the amazing story that led this culinary genius to Chicago.
Incredible story.
It's an amazing story. Mm-hmm. And now he's got one of the best restaurants in the nation. And I think one day with the world. The nation is not enough, Ty. It is not enough. We are going to take over the world before this is said and done. And Danielle, your wife, who's your partner in this, is here as well. And she's also a mixologist par excellence.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
You know, if you're not busy, they could use you at Northwestern right now, actually anesthetizing patients. So that would be
okay,
a good thing
on,
for you.
Yeah.
All right.
True.
Stand by. We'll be right back. But first, Judy's News coming your way in 2 minutes.
I've been working like a dog, day and night, trying to finish up this job and do it right. There's only a few things that a man like me needs. And Jesus whiskey, and you're up next to me, singing, hey, honey, I'm coming home. Don't know why we've gone so long.
Yeah, that is the Talbot Brothers. Talbot Brothers are here. It's going to be some live music for Live Music Friday.
Okay, they're good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I can't tell them apart already. Well, I just met them, but I don't know. I'm not sure anybody can tell them apart.
Yeah,
they're actually real brothers. They're real.
They are the Talbot brothers.
You know, like in a band, and you go, hey, they're the brothers. And that's not an Allman right there. I don't know who the hell that is. Anyway, the Talbot brothers are here. We're going to get to them in just a second. They've got an album out, and they're going to be here in Chicago at this is a very cool thing, on next Thursday at the Haymarket Americana Series. And which, if you've not been to Haymarket, it's on Randolph at Halsted. It's a great old traditional restaurant. There's been there forever under a number of different names, but it's a great American restaurant. And then in the back, they've got one of the best music clubs in Chicago. It's great. It's got its own bar. It's got great acoustics.
It's got its own brewery and great menu too.
Yeah. So
all going on there.
Exactly. Actually tomorrow night they're going to be up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We'll talk to them about that in just a few minutes. I don't know. Good luck to you up there, gentlemen. That's all I want to say.
Yeah.
I want to also thank Hai Su, Vietnamese Kitchen, and Cafe Da, which is the same item actually.
Yeah.
It's at 18th and Carpenter. And it's one of the best restaurants in America right now. And don't take my word for it. Take the words of, Michelin, James
that
Beard.
That counts.
Eater Chicago, the Chicago Reader, those readers. It's just amazing, amazing, amazing stuff that's going on here. And Tai Dang is one of the great American stories, as well as wife Danielle. They built this restaurant basically on two container ships out of Vietnam, because your family, you have still family there, right? You came here as essentially a refugee who, with your family, had a half American child from the Vietnam War.
Yeah, my mom adopted. Yep.
And that your mom had adopted, and you came to the United States through that program that allowed people in for that. And have now created this incredible piece of culinary art on the near southwest side of Chicago. So thank you for doing that.
Congratulations. That's so exciting.
And if people want, it's Haisous, Haisous is how you spell that. HAISOUS. And Danielle, thank you for being here. And
thank you so much for making
very stiff drinks for everybody. She's actually the architect of the place, too. I mean, it's an amazing story. And, you know, when they have reality shows and every dope is on a reality show, why do they have a reality show about these two people and tell this American story? This is a Netflix series, my friends.
The story should be heard and the food should be eaten.
Yes. Oh, my God. Again, don't just take my word for it. All right, let's talk to the brothers Talbot right now. Oh my gosh, I'm like,
hello, Cleveland.
we're in a very large hall now. Mm-hmm. It's good that Cheesy DJ is actually still asleep on the couch in the DJ lounge. All right. So you guys are actually brothers.
Yes.
Where are you from?
We're from Imperial, Nebraska.
Oh.
Which you never heard of.
But yes, no.
Real.
We have not.
Actually, there are outside of Omaha and Lincoln and Kearney, no one's heard of any town in Nebraska, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the way it is. You could say, I'm from Slivovitz, Nebraska, and people go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know what that
south
is.
South of Omaha.
Yeah, it's on I-80, right? Yeah. That's where it is. All right, and now you've got the new album out, right, called Gray?
Yes, we recorded Gray out in Portland. We've been living out in Portland, Oregon for about 2 years now. So we recorded Gray when we were there. It's our latest one.
All right. And what do you want to do off of it?
We're going to play your first song, if this is okay. We're going to play a song called Dead Man Pass.
Take it away.
In my head, shivering pines say that summer is dead. Chest feels hollow and my hands are numb. Do my best to swallow all the things I've done. You break your back, but you still don't have bread. You won't go back on the things that you said. You bleed your heart out, and it takes every drop. You come too far now to ever stop. Wash me in the water, and I'll never go back. Even when I'm walking through Dead Man Pass. You can't trust a man, cause he just lets you down. Crooked and twisted, we grow from the ground. From dust we came here, dust we shall return. From dust we came in, dust we shall return. Wash me in the water and I'll never go back. Even when I'm walking through Dead Man Pass, you wash me in the water and I'll never go back. Even when I'm walking through Dead Man Pass. Wash me in the water and I'll never go back. Even when I'm walking through Dead Man Pass.
Oh my God.
Wow. Oh my God.
The Talbot Brothers. The album is called Gray. You can see them next week in Chicago, next Thursday at Haymarket. They're going to be in. I don't know why you guys are going to Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah,
they're
stay away from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, they're thugs up there.
We don't like him.
They're very scary up there.
Mm-hmm. We heard about this rivalry. Actually, We'll try to keep our heads down.
Yeah. Don't wear a Bears hat, okay?
Right. Yeah, right,
don't,
yeah.
Don't pick one of those up.
I don't think they are. I think they're going to wear Huskers gear. That's yeah, kind of my guess.
Okay. You're okay.
Is yeah, what it's going to be.
They'll like you a lot.
Go Big Red.
Yeah, exactly. And Lake Orion, Minnesota, too, right? Is that where you're going to be?
Yeah, Lake Orion, Michigan.
Michigan. That's what I meant, Michigan, yeah, not Minnesota. Yeah. And that's at 20 Front Street in Lake Orion. That's also coming up next week as well. But most important show, the way people can see you here in Chicago, Haymarket Americana, yes, concert series at the Haymarket, Randolph, and Halsted in Chicago next Thursday night. Do not miss these guys. One more from them coming right up after Judy Pollack tells us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN News.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
All right. I am simply blown away, actually, by the Talbot brothers who are in the studio with us in Studio G.
So good.
They sound amazing. I also want to thank the fine folks at Shure who set that studio up for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, our engineering staff. Like, I mean, we shouldn't forget about them. Mm-hmm. They actually make them sound
and
great.
And we have to face them every day, too.
So yes, exactly.
Make sure guys, we name them.
The guys at Shure we never really have to deal with. But they've created this acoustically perfect environment
for
them.
Beautiful.
Yes,
and it so is. It is. I mean, if you guys only, I know you're listening to it and you're as you're doing it, but wait till you hear it after you've done it.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to that.
Yeah, you're going to want it. You're going to want to go sell this, and I'm going to want 10%. That's the way I look
remember
at it.
Remember Rokan, okay?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. All right, the Talbot Brothers, a new CD is called Gray, and you can find that where all fine music is sold and stolen on the internet. And I want to, let's see. Next Thursday night, do not miss this, the Americana series that is going on at one of the great music rooms in Chicago, Haymarket, Americana Series. Haymarket is the restaurant that is at Randolph and Halsted in Chicago. Go in there. What time? Do we know what time you guys are going on that night? There's a couple of other acts, too, right?
Yeah, we're playing with Darling West. Get there early and grab some food, and you won't miss any of the bands.
Oh, I see what you just did. Oh, dude.
The double plug.
Dude, you are ahead of... You're going to get invited back.
He's going to go very far. Yeah. They both are.
Need somebody.
Yeah, I know how this goes. Oh, remember, Nick and Tyler Talbot, you are going to be hearing from them, my friends. All right, what do you got to play for us now?
I'm going to play a song called We Got Love. This is a single off of Gray.
Take it away.
Packed some bags and we headed west. Thought that it might be the best thing for us. I was thinking about you and all the things that you leave behind, family and a peace of mind. But I got you, and I am gonna love you till the stars go out, shelter up above you till they all fall down. We ain't got a lot. We got love. We ain't got a lot. We got love. Floating like feathers in the heavy rain. Two of us together can weather any change comes our way. Feels like home. Home is who you're with when you don't feel alone anymore. I am gonna love you till the stars go out, shelter up above you till they all fall down. We ain't got a lot. We got love. We ain't got a lot. We got love.
for the dirt. We ain't got a lot, we gotta learn. We ain't got a lot, we gotta learn. No, no, we ain't got a lot, we gotta learn. We ain't got a lot, we gotta learn.
I want to bring the Talbot brothers home, and I just want them to play for me at dinner, and then afterwards,
perfect weekend music.
After a few cocktails, you know, like my friends come over, and they like to take the gummies now. I don't know what goes on with that.
Right, that's weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
But make them sign something, Ro, before you let them out of the house.
I know.
Get a napkin.
Get them.
I know. I would like to. Right. I have a cocktail napkin here. I'd like you to sign a few things on. I mean, this is. Well, first of all, congratulations on the record.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to be in Chicago.
Yes.
And you'll be back on Thursday at Haymarket Chicago for the Americana series. And that is going to be next Thursday, the 23rd of August. And it's the kind of thing that you don't want to miss if you don't. I could just tell right now.
It's very special.
Yeah, these guys. And again, you can't tell them apart. We just don't know which one is which.
You don't need to.
Do your parents know which one is which?
No, they always say Nick, Tyler,
get down here.
I do that with my dog.
Are you guys twins or are you
are 2 years.
2 years apart?
Yep.
Yeah, close enough to be friends, but close enough to fight all the time.
Yeah, I'll bet. Oh, you know how these bands made from brothers always work out.
We're past that point.
I hope so.
We had our little fight.
There is nothing like fraternal harmony, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the brothers or sisters or whatever,
read each
sing
other's
together.
Thoughts. You know each other best. You got it all.
I love that. I was thinking about it while we were playing. Is Nick's like giving me these little signals and things and not saying anything? And I was thinking, like, you know, people on the radio will never know.
I completely screwed up. And no.
Well,
no,
I'm kidding. All right, you two. It's like the Gallaghers all over a set, you know.
Watch out.
Yeah, it's like the Robinson
Brothers.
Ends badly. The Robinson Brothers are the Black Crowes, one of the greatest bands of all time. Broken up because they're brothers.
I know.
Yeah.
Take that route, okay?
Gentlemen, congratulations on all of this. The album is called Gray. The Talbot Brothers, find them on the internet and go see them next week at Haymarket Americana's concert series in Chicago.